All right, on today's show, Billy Napier will be back at Florida. We discuss, plus, how big of a game is this Ole Miss hosting Georgia, other intriguing games, and of course, race for the case, including a lost dog.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Can't grill in the Grove and sure can get hammered.
Russ Dellinger.
And is that legal to throw tortillas at people?
And SI's Pat Forty.
But you try to explain this sport to somebody from Europe, they're like, what?
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod, and we welcome back all of our listeners who were obsessed with politics and now come back to college.
Yeah, it's pretty much an either or, right?
Well, yeah. And we have, yeah, the political ads will end.
Thank God.
We're a big tent. We take them all. So you're here. Yeah. Come back. Welcome. It's going to be chaotic. It's going to be awesome. It's November. Okay. It's November. And it doesn't feel like November, maybe because the weather's been so good around the country. I don't know. It just, like, this is week 11. I'm like, whoa, 11, like Thanksgiving soon. Like, this is,
yeah.
Enjoy your weekends. Treasure your weekends. Enjoy your Maction, whatever you got.
Yeah.
And we got breaking news. We're going to talk a bunch of games here, but this email comes in. They send it out to all the media. A letter to Gator Nation from UF Athletics Director Scott Strickland. I don't know if this means I'm in Gator Nation or not. Maybe. No. I wanted to let you know Billy Napier will continue as the head football coach of the Florida Gators. As we've seen the past several weeks, the young men on this team represent what it means to be a Gator. Their resolve, effort, and execution are evident in their performance and growth each week, building a foundation that promises greater success next season and beyond. Billy Napier will return. The Gators are 4-4. A couple things on this. One, I was wondering whether they would have to perform really well at Texas this weekend to keep his job. That kind of tough with DJ Lagway hurt. Didn't really kind of, you know, kind of see fair. They have played pretty well. It's a brutal schedule. They lost to Miami. They lost to Texas A&M. They lost to Tennessee. And they lost to Georgia. And other than the Miami game, it was not embarrassing in any of those. And they've dealt with two quarterbacks down. So Billy Napier's back. My other enjoyment out of this is that I'm glad we got Pat's domino coaching lunacy column. We got that segment last show because it already would be out because we had James Franklin. Right.
Got that out of the way.
We got great content. And now we got breaking news. So this is working out great for us. Pat, what do you think of Billy Napier getting another season?
Yeah, we barely got that under the wire. I appreciate Scott Strickland waiting until Thursday to do this. So thank you. Big decision. I don't mind it. I think it's fair. I have been completely underwhelmed by Billy Napier so far. But as you pointed out, they've played better in difficult circumstances as the season has gone along. They're playing an incredibly tough schedule, hardest schedule in the country. The teams that have beaten them, Miami is undefeated. Texas A&M is in the playoff hunt. Tennessee is in the playoff bracket right now. Georgia is in the playoff bracket right now. And they damn near beat Tennessee. Probably, you could even say, should have, on the road. They were leading Georgia in the second half. The other two games weren't good. That was early on. They got their stuff together. They played better. And it would be completely unfair to try to judge Billy Napier on the remainder of this season if they're going to have a third-string walk-on Yale quarterback as their guy. You know, DJ Lagway, I think, is listed as questionable. But if they have to start a third stringer and you're going to say Billy Napier's job is in the balance going at Texas, LSU, Mississippi? No, that's ridiculous. So you make the decision now. You ride it out. Now, I will say, I mean, coming into the season, we all said he's got to do better. And his record is not going to be better. If anything, it's probably going to be a third straight losing season, which at Florida is really hard to justify. But I think the arc of this season and probably the wisdom of waiting and not making that move early when everyone in the world, myself included, expected it when they were 1-2, is to let things play out. And we've talked about it on the pod plenty, that there's been more patience with coaches, partly because money's tighter. And this is a $26 million situation here. So give him one more year. See how it goes there. Scott Strickland, Billy Napier, sink or swim together in 2025.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to make, is that, wow, next year is big for both of those guys. The athletic director position and the head football coaching position in 2025. And you'll have probably a new president at Florida. You have an interim right now. And that probably could have played a role in all this as well. But I think the bigger role that was played in this is Scott Strickland's trust in faith in Billy Napier from the moment he hired him, as really the only guy that he interviewed, and the only guy that he was kind of focused on. And I think he believes there's been enough progress, you know, to keep him, number one. And number two is what Pat had mentioned. There's just overall, we're going to see this year, and maybe in years coming, that there's going to be more patience with coaches, and there's going to be fewer firings and fewer massive buyouts paid with coaches, and maybe future contracts with coaches that don't include those massive buyouts, because the players are going to get directly paid by the school. And we hadn't talked about it yet. It's a good time to mention it. Dan's favorite topic, the house case. Last week, all the ADs got a memo that set the projected year one cap of $20.5 million for each program can spend that much and divide among their athletes. And so it gets more real, right, that this is arriving, and that you're going to have to spend this money. And guess what Billy Napier's buyout is? I think it's 25 or 26 million. So you're going to trade a firing of a coach that you trust and you've seen progress in for a year of rev share. Basically, it's a year of your football roster that you would be eliminating, a year and a half, really, when you get down to it, by firing him. So that's weighing, I think, on everybody's mind. And I think this year is going to be we're going to see the implications, not just with Billy Napier, right? Dave Aranda entered on the hottest seat. Him and Billy Napier entered on the hottest seat entering this year. They both, it looks like, are going to keep their jobs.
Yeah, we talked about how the buyouts were so big that schools that, you know, you can't afford to buy these guys out now, on the last show, on Tuesday show. And I find that the great irony, the coaches have complained and complained about these spending money on the players one way or the other. I'm all for it, except when it happens, right? The guys totally deserve money, except when we have to give it to them. Like, not everyone.
Except when they leave my school for someone else's money.
Right. Not everyone can be Caitlin Clark. Sorry. But they're actually getting their jobs saved because they're paying the players, the thing they hate the most. Mm-hmm. Look at this.
Yeah.
As a practical matter, is Florida better if you don't have a coach lined up, ready to go, and you need an elite coach, and you can't hire somebody because they're already working right now? Do you have to wait until after Thanksgiving, potentially wait into December to hire a coach and miss the start of the transfer portal window? Or are you better off, right, saying Billy Napier is a good enough coach? If we fire him, Lagway, maybe we lose Lagway, maybe we lose some of these guys. And putting extra money, let's say they put $5 million extra dollars, $10 million, I don't know, whatever they're already paying their roster, into the transfer portal, which is going to open right after November. If you've got a guy now with a month and you can rebuild, again, this is the advantage of the losers. We're talking about this as like a kind of college draft order. Miami can't focus right now on the transfer portal because they're going to try to win the national title. And you can't be signing this guy and this guy and this guy and upsetting your chemistry and having some of your current players leave to impact your depth for the playoff. So Florida and Florida State kind of now have a little bit of advantage where they're going to spend all their time doing this. And if you're Billy Nate, you go, okay, look, this guy's a pretty good coach. He won at Louisiana. And, you know, this is a brutal schedule. There's no way. I think this was a perfectly timed deal. You're setting him up to spend his time focused on the transfer portal. And the reality is they'll probably lose their next three games. Doesn't mean they're bad. Now, next year's schedule, this is the one thing. This year's schedule is brutal. Next year isn't a whole lot better. USF visits, and they are showing a little fight, maybe more than UCF at this point. They're at Miami. They get Florida A&M in town. They get Georgia. And they're playing Florida State. And then they're at the end of the year. But then we also have Mississippi State, Tennessee, Texas, Kentucky, LSU, and Ole Miss. So I think are the exact same teams they played this year in league. Well, whatever it is, it's pretty much the same schedule, except UCF is USF. So there's a lot on next year. But I don't know, as a practical matter, you're not better saying, you know what, let's pour instead of just blowing money on a buyout, let's pour some of those resources into the transfer portal.
Yeah, you know, and I think you can probably look down at the southern tip of the state and see how quickly things can turn around at Miami, which had, they have a losing record last year? I think they did. And now they're undefeated and playoff bound, it appears, at this point. So you get it right, you nail some things in the portal. You get a good quarterback, and they probably think Lagway can be that guy. And things can change very, very quickly, especially when you sit on a lot of talent. And I don't think anybody necessarily thinks that Florida is lacking in talent. They were 7-6 last year at Miami, so just for correction there.
I just wonder if we get to, like, that NBA level where you have a certain coach, and I'm not comparing Billy Napier to these guys, but, like, Popovich has a couple bad years, but then – like, you know, Steve Kerr, his injuries, right? They lose. It's all right. We'll get some guys. Like, you know, do you get to that part with some of these coaches? I just think steady winning is going to be very difficult, except at very few places, but certainly this. So very, very interesting. Ross, anything else on this?
You know, when you do this, obviously you hope to quiet everybody down a little bit, right? The fan base down as you're going into a very difficult stretch. So it maybe calms the waters a little bit. And I don't know, maybe that'll help Florida in this next few games. I think that DJ Lagway, the quarterback, a freshman quarterback, is also probably a big part of this in the faith that, Florida has in him, in his relationship with Billy Napier, who's obviously an offensive-minded guy. So, but if you're going to invest in keeping Billy Napier, you better invest in the roster, right? And I'm assuming that Florida's going to do that going forward with the ref share, transfer portal's about to heat up, right? Signing day and all that. So this is a big stretch to kind of get the roster in order, going into next year.
I will say this, Dan, while this, I think you can, Scott's going to take some blowback for this for sure. They need to beat Florida State at the end. You can't lose to the worst Florida State team in the last 55 years or whatever.
All of a sudden,
don't do that.
This plan will not be in place. Yeah, don't do that. I do think it helps that Florida State is so bad.
They're horrible.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Probably helps them a little.
Yeah.
All right. We talked a lot about what the Alabama, LSU, that's kind of the big game this weekend. We're going to pick it later. But and we talked on Tuesday's show. We also talked Georgia at Ole Miss. I'm interested in the Ole Miss part a little bit. This kind of changes it. I want to talk a little more Georgia, Ole Miss. We talked about this is such a big opportunity for Ole Miss hosting Georgia on Saturday. And the name that was most linked to Florida, whether it was possible or not, or the timing was going to work out, was Lane Kiffin. Does this impact? Was it just a lot of smoke, or does this help Lane Kiffin? What, you know, he needs to win this game. As far as, I mean, this, I think that this will be a disappointing season if they lose. And now the job that everyone was talking to him about is not opening right now. I don't know. Does it? I'm just throwing Lane Kiffin's name out there for content. Anyone got?
He knows Lane's name gets the clicks.
Come on, Lane. Can we talk Lane Kiffin, please? Deion Sanders. He could have been a Gator. We'll talk Deion later. No, I don't know. Saturday's game for Lane Kiffin, Pat. What do you think?
Huge, huge. You're going to be definitively out of the playoff race if you lose it with a team that was, you know, the best on paper that Ole Miss has had in a decade at least, maybe longer, maybe a lot longer. And going back to Eli Manning or even back to Johnny Vaught days. So if you're out of it with three losses on November 9th, that's tough with all the investment that was made in the roster and all the improvements that were made on the lines of scrimmage. And you can see it statistically, they lead the nation in sacks. You know, that was not really a Lane Kiffin team was supposed to be all flash and dash and scoring and tempo and creativity. But this is, you know, getting up and lining up and just attacking people defensively and being able to block offensively. All those things were in place and I think still are in place. And the thing for Kiffin here and for Ole Miss is this team at times has looked absolutely overpowering. I mean, they destroyed Arkansas, and while Arkansas's not great, they're also not terrible, and it was in Fayetteville. They destroyed South Carolina and Columbia. South Carolina's done some stuff. So, you know, they destroyed Wake Forest on the road. They've been a very good road team. They lost to LSU in Death Valley, but that game was close, and they really kind of led the whole way. They've shown the ability. Can you show it now against the big dog in the league for the last 5 years or whatever? It's a huge, huge game. And I do think it's a credibility game. Whether the Florida stuff dying down helps or not, I think it's almost immaterial, but it's another element to the Lane Kiffin saga.
Yeah. And we've talked pretty extensively this year about Ole Miss and the investment they made and the NIL, the donors and all that stuff. Everybody knows who the collective guy is at Ole Miss, Walker Jones. He's been in front of congressional hearings. I mean, they are out front on all this stuff. And they're spending, Walker Jones and them told me, about $12 million on the football roster. And that's a lot of investment, especially for that school. And it's got to come to fruition with a playoff appearance. It'd be different if it was a four-team playoff. Right? It's a 12-team playoff. I think there was expectation entering the year that if we're going to make the playoff, it's going to be this year with this roster in an expanded version. And for them not to get in, if they don't get in, that's going to be a significant disappointment. And I think with a loss, even though it's to Georgia, and even though one of their other losses was LSU, I think with the loss to at home to Kentucky, 4-4 Kentucky team, that a 3-loss Ole Miss didn't get in the playoffs, right? So, or very unlikely. So it's a huge one. It's at home, and I know it's not at night, what Lane had a issue with, but entering the fourth quarter, it'll be at night.
They'll get rowdy enough down there. I got no doubts. The Rebels. Red Cup, right? Red Solo Cup Nation, I thought they call themselves sometimes. Pretty much
Red
it.
Cup Nation or something. Red
can't Cup. Grill in the Grove, but you sure can get hammered. Stop that.
They've been known to.
All right, we're talking elimination games, and obviously, as I said, LSU-Alabama is a classic elimination game. This isn't quite, because I don't know that a lot would have to happen for Texas Tech to rise up in the Big 12, but it could be elimination game for Colorado. And Colorado is sitting there with one loss in the Big 12. Texas Tech has two. Colorado's other loss this season was at Nebraska. So Colorado has a chance. They need a little bit of help, I think, from Iowa State. We'll see how it all plays out at the end. But Colorado has a chance to make the Big 12 championship game and still make a playoff. We have spoken for a year and whatever this is, two-thirds of a season, about can Deion Sanders get Colorado good, this, all the different stuff. How good is Shador? How good is Travis Hunter? There's been a lot of Colorado talk. And this was a team that was once 1-11 that lost those 11 games by over 32 points a game. Now we're talking, can he get them into the playoff? And that alone is pretty exciting for Colorado. But they are heading to Lubbock. The tortillas will be flying. One of the great traditions.
Yes. Dion, wasn't Dion told about that earlier this week? And he said, is that legal to throw tortillas at people?
Is it a weapon? Is a tort? I mean, Did you see the one? I thought that was like a TV reporter. I don't even know if it was this year. Got hit by a tortilla while she was doing her port thing.
Mm. Sounds like a good case for people's court.
Is a flying tortilla a weapon? I'm going to say no. I mean, if they're stale, but they're not.
They'd have to be really
very stale. They'd have to then be very stale.
It's a frisbee if it's really stale.
Yeah. It is one of the great and oddball traditions of all time. I don't even know how
it's fantastic. No, that's college football.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
like,
people
in Lubbock all of a sudden are, you know, throw tortillas around when they score touchdowns. It's like, people, you try to explain this sport to somebody from Europe, they're like, what?
And what really? What is the grocery stores in Lubbock just must sell more tortillas.
That's right.
Right? That's like they're right. Just yeah. Like you just got to stock up. Can't buy enough.
Yeah. Tortilla sales heading into home football games. Yeah. Astronomical.
All right. According to this, during the 2019 NCAA. Oh, no. This may not be the origin. This is, I'm reading a Lubbock.
No, it goes back to the Leach days.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It definitely goes.
One back flew out onto the Final Four, the national championship court, and they had to stop the game, which. This is a great lead. Flour tortilla flew onto the court there. During the 2019 men's basketball championship, briefly pausing the game and puzzling at least half the crowd and presumably the majority of the national television audience. Yeah. Sometime between the late 1980s and early 90s, they started throwing tortillas. No one really knows.
So, well, that predates Leach.
Yeah. Archivists, historians, and even lifelong superfans have tossed around several stories to accompany the text. This is a real serious report. I mean, who did this good work? Brandy Addison. Good job. Good job.
Okay.
Yeah. One says in 1989, students would remove the lids from their fountain sodas and throw them onto the field. And then soon they started going with tortillas. Anyway. Oh, legend has it an ESPN announcer before a Tech A&M football game in 1992 said Lubbock had nothing but Texas Tech football and a tortilla factory. I don't know. Anyway, where was I? Colorado to the playoff. Like, this is now high stakes. This isn't about reputation or proof of concept. This is now serious business. They get past Texas Tech and they got Utah at Kansas, Oklahoma State. That's what's left for Colorado. If they can get through this, they are going to be favored on all three of those games. Pat?
Oh, it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And people that were kind of making a big deal out of the TV ratings for Colorado are down. Well, they're getting ready to go back up. I predict, especially if they win this game.
That's so dumb.
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous. But people will be watching intently this weekend and every other game as long as Colorado is in the hunt. Brett Yormark, Marketer Supreme, I guarantee his wildest dream is undefeated BYU versus 10-2 Colorado in that Big 12 championship game. And the ratings would be phenomenal. The curiosity would be phenomenal. And if Colorado wins, you might get both in. So that would be the ideal scenario for the Big 12. And Colorado has, let's be frank, Colorado has maybe two of the best 10 players or five players even in college football. They've certainly got one of the best 2-3 quarterbacks. And they've certainly got the most versatile player who may end up being a number one draft pick. And they've got other really good skill players. And the biggest thing, the reason why they're winning, their defense is way improved. They're 13 points a game fewer giving up than they did last year. They're more solid on both sides of the ball. They can run it a little better. They can stop the run better. Just a really, really good job building and extending the program by Deion Sanders. He hired better staff. They got better players. They're a more solid team, and they've got star power. Fascinating to watch as long as they're in this.
Yeah, I'm sure Brett Yormark would never admit it, right? But he's got to be rooting for the Buffs to keep on going. The ratings would be, as Pat said, would be pretty incredible. Not only do you have a Heisman Trophy you know, candidate on the field, but obviously prime in a team that scores a lot of points and it can be really fun to watch. Did you guys, speaking of Heisman Trophy contender, did you guys see that Travis Hunter was in State College last weekend during their bye week? Yeah. He flew to State College and got on game day and got on big noon kickoff with a shirt or a banner that said Heisman or something. So the campaign is full on. I don't know that I ever have seen that. A player during a bye week go to another game.
Private jet, you know that too.
Yep. Oh, of course.
Yeah,
don't bother trying to go to Boulder to sit down with him, but we'll put him on Big Noon.
Well, not available for interviews?
Not a non-responsive sports information department, let's put it that way.
All right, now we got Pat's. Now Pat's going to get angry. Rest Damn of the show, right. We're going to keep him on the rails. Gosh, you named Deion Sanders Man of the Year last year or whatever. Jeez.
Hey, got us nowhere.
No, apparently not. Well, I know we've been, and this has been a very Travis Hunter pro podcast.
Oh,
yeah. Just flies to State College. Yeah. It's a whole different world.
Classic.
Yeah. Whole different world. But to that point, they are coming off a bye. And everyone, you know, Hunter gets dinged up because he plays 123 snaps a game. So he should be rested. Texas Tech has showed a lot of, like, they had a really good stretch there, including a really good win against Cincinnati, one against Arizona State, and then they dropped two, but the huge comeback last week against Iowa State. So they're playing up and down ball, but they're coming off a great win, and you just don't go into the LBB without bringing your game. So fascinating game, and it's now Colorado in a meaningful football game, not just Colorado, let's watch because Coach Prime. Interesting situation. All right. We'll be back after this message. All right. We like doing intriguing games sometimes because this weekend is one of those where it's not that there's a ton of like rank versus rank games, but there's a whole bunch of really interesting ones out there. So, Pat, start with you. Intriguing games?
Yeah, we're going to pick it later, but Michigan at Indiana. I did a little ranting on Tuesday night about Indiana being disrespected by the selection committee. You just look at what they've done on the field, and it's damn impressive. Take out the fact that it's Indiana. But they're 9-0, and they've won every game by two touchdowns or more. They didn't trail for the first eight. They finally fell behind 10-0 in the first quarter on the road. You think, oh, is this when they crack? Oh, no, they scored 47 unanswered against Michigan State. So now they play Michigan. They play a brand name. Not that good a team, but a brand name. And this, I think, if they win, will magically give them more credibility to their season. Curtis Rourke came back from the thumb injury and was great again last week. We got to start talking about him in the Heisman race, too. He deserves it. He's been unbelievable this year. And just the roster that Kurt Cignetti's put together with all the Sun Belt, Mid-American Conference, Conference USA guys, it's one of the great coaching jobs I've ever seen. And it is a fascinating story as long as they keep winning.
Committee chair. Just happens to be the AD at Michigan. He will be getting an in-person scout. Ross, you got an intriguing game?
I do, but let me tell y'all where I'm going to be spending the weekend.
Oh.
My good friend decided to get married this weekend in Lexington, Kentucky. So I will be on the Bourbon Trail, so that's good. But I will be missing most of the games as I'm in the wedding. And before the season started, this weekend was like an incredible weekend of top 25 matchups. I think preseason rankings, according to preseason rankings, we were supposed to have five top 25 matchups. We only have two because of how teams have done. And so I just wanted to make that note and tell you guys I'll drink some bourbon from you.
I just like the note. Ross is must be a great friend. He's a good friend of me. But you've been a best man a couple times in the last year. You're in wedding.
Last year, last September. These guys know what I do for a living, right? Yeah. And their wives do, I think,
they,
as well.
But you pass a lot of tests. See, I think I was in like one wedding party. My buddy Murph, you guys have met. And, you know.
Your buddy Murph?
Yeah, Murph.
You have a buddy named Murph?
Yeah. I'm from Boston. What do you?
Of course.
Murph's a good dude. Yes.
Of course. Yeah, no. It's so stereotypical. It's just so stereotypical.
Guess what? I know a couple Sullies too. I mean, what are we doing here? Yeah, Murph. He's listening.
That's fair. I have a plenty of Boudreaux, you know, down where I'm from. Yeah, we got some Boudreaux in the family.
You drank with him once in New Orleans. Right. He probably drank a lot. Yeah. Murph. Yeah. Murph. If you know me, you know Murph. Anyway, right. Murph, other than that, I think I got vetoed probably by the brides. Like, we don't need him. He'll probably be too drunk. I don't know. And I don't blame him. I never was like, geez, I think I would do a better job at that. No, don't put me in your
as
wedding.
As a matter of fact,
don't even invite such me.
You are such bad wedding company that at the Thamel nuptials, you organized a betting pool. What was it about? I'm trying to remember.
Whether Pete would dance. That's right.
Yeah, that was it.
Who won? So,
I did.
Dan, he bribed the band.
And that didn't work, though. Bribe the band. Everyone said
so you won and he did dance?
He did dance. I bet he would. And everyone said he wouldn't. I did bribe the band to call him out to dance. And they did, but he ignored it. And then I was getting a little nervous because I had a lot. There was like 8 or 10 guys against me.
Yeah, it was like
hundreds.
$200.
Yeah,
on
it was hundreds of dollars on this. And but then he did dance, so I won. Yeah, see, this is why I'm not don't invite me to your wedding.
All right, so back to intriguing games.
Yeah, anyway, yes.
Yeah, anyway. Sorry about that. We went down the side road there. How about Miami at Georgia Tech? Noon kickoff on ESPN on Saturday. Georgia Tech's lost two in a row. They got beat by Virginia Tech, and then they lost to Notre Dame. But they played really well at times this season, Georgia Tech has. And maybe not just lately, but we saw them, you know, stick around and hang around against Syracuse. They beat Florida State to start the year, which that's not anything, obviously. But Duke and North Carolina, they won games. So they're there. They're there as one of a team that can at least push Miami. And we've seen plenty of teams push Miami, right? They've won like 4 one-score games, 2, you know, review games that they needed a review overturned or confirmed to win the game. So I think this could be an interesting one. It's in Atlanta. It'll be pretty packed there. I think they're sold out crowd. So keep your eye on this one for upset alert.
All right, I'm going deep cut here. Friday night, Iowa at UCLA.
Oh, I like that. Yep.
Okay, it's on Fox. It's a Friday night game. A lot of weird things happen on Friday nights. Iowa, this is the new look Hawkeyes. They've scored 40 or more 3 of the last 4 games. Puzzling performance at Michigan State. But other than that, I mean, they just beat Wisconsin 42-10. And how good are these guys and how good are they getting? And at the same time, don't look now, but UCLA has a pulse. Not just a pulse, but they went at Rutgers, at Nebraska, and won them both. And Deshaun Foster might be like onto something here. I don't know. They lost 5 in a row and everyone thought they're horrible. And I think the big reason is they beat Hawaii very close. Then they got smoked by Indiana in their second game at home. And it was like, oh my God, how bad is UCLA? Well, how good is Indiana? Then they lost at LSU. Then they lost to Oregon. Then they lost at Penn State. Then they lost a very close game against Minnesota. And it's like, okay, this team's terrible. There was a lot of like, Deshaun Foster got the job because it was a late cycle because Chip Kelly bailed Ohio State and all that. But credit where credit is due, they have gotten off the mat and gone all the way to Rutgers and won, come home, gone all the way back, they had an off weekend there, to Nebraska and won. And I'm very interested to see what UCLA puts up Friday night. Obviously, who wins this game? But is there something there with Deshaun Foster and UCLA that speaks to a brighter future ahead? And then what are these Hawkeyes? So I'm looking forward to this Friday night game.
Yeah, that's a good call there. I love the quote from Deshaun Foster. I think it was after the Nebraska game. He said, Martin hired the right guy, meaning Martin Jarman, the AD at UCLA. He's putting it together. He really has. And they're a good run defense, a solid. They're not great, but they're a solid run defense against an Iowa team that has become run, just like Kirk Ferentz would like.
Okay. Any more intriguing games, Pat?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. How about the Holy War? I mean, 10-15 Saturday night, undefeated BYU with everything riding on them against their biggest, most bitter rival whose season has been a wreck. And if ever there was a moment where Utah's going to salvage something, because you're always sure that a Kyle Whittingham team is going to eventually just show up and play well, this would be the moment. You could ruin BYU's undefeated season, but it's been so bad at Utah. I mean, they've Cam Rising played like a couple of games, and then he's back out, and he's done for the year. Longtime offensive coordinator Andy Ludwig was either jumped or was pushed out. They've lost, I think it's 4 in a row. I mean, they were supposed to win the Big 12, and they're nowhere near it. So the offense has just been horrible. They haven't scored more than 19 points since September. But if you could turn it around here, boy, that would make your season, and it would ruin BYU's.
Yeah, that's a good one. That was one of the five preseason top 25 matchups that were left with two. You know, Dan, I've been watching this G5 race to the CFP. We all have, right? There's probably five teams left in the race to the G5 spot. Boise, UNLV, Army, Memphis, and Louisiana are probably the top kind of five in best position. Army plays maybe their most difficult game yet at North Texas. 5-3, been playing well. We all probably recognize the name of the North Texas quarterback, Chandler Morse, Chad's son. He's been a couple of spots and has been playing well in general offensively. They've been putting up some numbers. And, you know, the big question, obviously, when you play Army, can you stop the option, stop the run? Army leads the country, over 300 yards rushing. And their defense has been really good too, you know, as we've seen. So that this is a big one though. Can Army hang around? Because they really can't afford probably a loss because they do play Notre Dame right now in 2 weeks. So if you think they might lose that one, then they really can't afford another loss and surpass a potential Boise or something like that. So this is a big one to watch. It is at 3:30 Eastern on ESPN2, Army at North Texas.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with 3:30.
Love that.
Eastern ESPN game. And this one is Clemson visiting Virginia Tech. I want to see what happens. Clemson getting off the mat after the humiliation home loss to Louisville. We saw them respond to the Georgia loss early in the season with a great run. Where's this program? Can they remain in some kind of contention for the ACC title, or do they spiral a little bit? And this is not an easy one. They're going to Lane Stadium up in Blacksburg, and Virginia Tech came into the season as one of these teams. You're like, man, they could have a big year. They have not had a big year. They're 5-4. But consider these four losses. Overtime at Vanderbilt, that was deemed a disaster at the time, was not. They lose 26-23 to Rutgers. They'd like to have that one back, but they didn't get it. They lost at Miami on a Hail Mary, almost fail Mary. No one knew where they caught the ball, right? That Friday night game, 38-34. And then they lost at Syracuse in overtime. And otherwise, they handled Georgia Tech, they handled Boston College, they handled Stanford, and they handled Old Dominion on the road and Marshall. Not a bad team, maybe. And maybe a team that can give Clemson every bit of a game when Clemson needs to kind of, you know, get back up off its feet. So I'm really interested in that one. Anyone have a big one or should we move on? Okay.
I would just want to add the Army North Texas game to me is fascinating. See if Bryson Daly is back after missing last week's game for Army, the quarterback with an unspecified injury / illness. But that dude, my West Texas hard ass from Abernathy, Texas, he lifts with the offensive lineman. That's his mentality. He threw the discus in high school, and he's the quarterback. I love it.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. You know that that part of that game is pretty big on, you know, if he's returning or not. And they haven't Thursday afternoon, right? They haven't announced anything.
I mean, I doubt they will.
You never know what you're betting. You see the Ole Miss put out their injury report for Georgia.
26 players.
26, yeah.
It's good.
Now, like 11 of them were probable.
At it again. Reaching his little bag of tricks there.
Yeah, didn't the Patriots say that Tom Brady was probable for like 5 years?
Yeah, shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Belichick did not. I did a whole story once on Belichick's passive aggressiveness. He didn't like the report, so he just listed. He didn't like having a report, so he put him probable for it was like 5 or 6 seasons. People be like, Tom, how's that shoulder? He's like, see, that's why he had the hoodie too. They told him he had to wear Reebok clothing, and you didn't think they should tell a guy, a grown man, how to dress. So he took the ugliest hooded sweatshirt, cut the sleeves off, and tried to mock him, and it became their number one seller. It's fantastic. There's a million things he did. Anyway, 26 guys. Thanks. That's helpful. Yeah. Who knows? All right. So we did have an election, and we want to keep it to how it might affect the lobbying in Congress for how college football and college sports may operate. There's a pretty good chance that the Republicans will control the House, Senate, and presidency. I think the House is the only one they're still deciding, obviously. Ross, will this impact, explain to me like I'm a fifth grader, how could this impact anything?
Yeah, I'm going to try to do that. Yeah. Obviously, we know the White House results. We know the Senate results. They'll be controlled by Republicans. The House, as of this morning, I think the House Republicans, they already controlled the House, and they picked up one seat, and they were leading in 13 of the 21 other races. So there's a good chance that Republicans will also control the House. I hate to go as far as saying bottles were popped from college administrators yesterday when election results came in, but I think bottles were popped because the way that Republicans have approached college sports legislation has been more on the NCAA, in more on the side of guardrails, Dan, in structure,
mm-hmm. My dream,
in anti-employment, more so than anything, anti-employment, as opposed to the Democrats, right, which have been more on athletes, a little more freedom for the athletes, athlete rights, athlete kind of healthcare stuff, in some cases, pro employment. So yet, which is why it's taken right 5 years and we still don't have a bill that had been taken up on the floor. It's because these parties have disagreed in a split.
I never found the Democrats' position real appealing either, by the way.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm now on an island of no guardrails, no employment, no guardrails, no one else with me. But just to clear up, I don't want to be pigeonholed.
You're an independent, Dan.
I am an independent thinker.
Floating out there. Yeah. You and Bernie.
They all hate me. That's my goal.
Yeah. So anyway, now that all, you know, the Republicans, one party controls all of the branches, you would think it is easier to get any legislation through. Certainly legislation that many Republicans agree on and would take as a win, right, of college sports. So I like to break it down in three things, right? There's the legislation on a bill that would protect the NCAA and college conferences from enforcing their rules and codifying the House settlement. And then there's the Title IX component, and then there's the employment component. So the Title IX component is really significant in this too, because you've got schools that are going to start sharing revenue in a way that probably is unequal when you look at male and female, and certainly a woman president in a Democratic president in a Democratic Congress would look at that probably differently, right, than Republicans would. So there's a sense that in Title IX and in employment, these two huge things that are lording over college athletics and the future of revenue share, they won't be as scrutinized under a Republican type of control. So that's kind of the gist.
Yeah, that, I mean, certainly the everything that I've picked up, Ross, correlates with what you've said. I talked to Ted Cruz in September, and he said, if I get the gavel as the chair of the Commerce Committee, which it appears he will, that he's going to push for legislation that is NCAA friendly, that is guardrail enhanced, I guess you would say, that provides antitrust exemption for the NCAA and does not deem athletes employees. So he's in position now. We'll see if he can get it done. There may be resistance to that. There may be, logically thinking, better things to do with your time. But that's, he stated to me in no ifs, ands, or buts, if I get the gavel, that's what I'm pushing for.
If we can do it, the gavel. Is there anyone free market left in Washington, D.C.?
Good question. Go Kansas.
I'm looking out my window, Dan. I see a market down the street.
So practically speaking, what's the difference between what we have now where they're paying everyone by NIL and paying them and deeming them employees? Like, does it, in a practical matter, does anyone care? Other than the ADs and stuff? Like, if I'm a fan, does it matter whether a guy's a employee of my team or we're just paying them $10.99?
I don't think it matters except for this, and Ross, you can correct me because you know this stuff better than I do, but there might be a little bit more inhibiting of athlete movement, which means you're going to keep them at a school for more than 1 year.
Right.
And that's the one thing the fans do not like, a lot of them. Some of them don't care. But it's like, hey, we would like to actually watch these guys play for more than 1 year before they go somewhere else, and then they go somewhere else, and then they go somewhere else.
Well, making them employees, right, changes a lot of things, including how you look at Title IX, right, and how Title IX is potentially applied. If they're employees, do they still fall under Title IX? And if they're employees, and we just made this a complete official business, it's a business, it's employees, then Dan, you're like, they're going to cut sports. I mean, there will for sure be sports eliminated, you know. And I think that. And what Pat said, I'm glad he brought up the Cruz piece because that is huge. There's two positions, three positions, I guess, that maybe should be focused on with all this. Cruz, the chair who would chair the Commerce Committee that controls college sports legislation, the Senate Commerce Committee. The president who controls appointments of Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights, who handles Title IX, and the National Labor Relations Board General Counsel, who is Jennifer Abruzzo, who is a obviously a liberal appointed by Biden, and Trump will almost certainly, was one of his first acts, I'm sure, dismiss her and appoint a conservative to operate be the general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board that does control employment. So you've got these positions, Senate Commerce Committee chair, the president, in the general counsel of the NLRB, that will all be changing over and all be changing to pro-NCAA anti-employment roles.
All right. Well, we will see what happens. I do like that the NCAA's position is, please do something that sports sucks, when in fact it doesn't. It's been fantastic, but hey, go NCAA. You're going to get your thing. We will see what happens. All right, we'll be back. Let's pick some games. All right, race for the case time. Oh, look who's dominating.
Dominating? Wait.
34, 25, and 1, me. Joe, 32, 27, and 1. Pat, 31, 28, and 1. Ross, 28, 30, and 2. Dominating. 9 over 500, and at no point of this season have I done any research on any of my selections until I said, okay, it's time for Race for the Case.
A little bit of an early victory lap. I'm just going to point that out.
A genius walks among us, man. A genius walks among us.
Keep talking,
this
brother.
Is like me declaring victory with Duke.
I didn't say it's
plus
over.
20 in the third quarter.
Over. I'm just saying, you guys listen to these people. These gambling experts are out there. I nail stuff like Texas A&M's partying too hard Saturday night. They're going to be hungover. Not, you know, run pass option. Much better against the RPO. All right. Who are we picking here? Let's see. Got to be picking Michigan at Indiana. Indiana finally got a big spread, 14 and a half. Cover Kurt. Can he cover 14 and a half? He's at home. It's a big one. 3:30 on CBS. Pat 40.
Yeah, it's a big one. And they have been cover monsters, and there is no way I'm betting against them here. Michigan is not the Michigan of the last couple of years. Indiana is not the Indiana of the last couple of years. That's been proven on both sides. And I think Indiana continues to rise to the moment and takes care of business and wins by more than 14 and a half.
I have picked against Indiana, not to lose, but just not to cover multiple times this year. And I think I've got them all wrong, which is probably why I'm six behind the lead. So I'm not going to do it again, although you know it's going to happen. I'm finally going to pick them to cover, and they're not going to cover. But I'm picking the Hoosiers to cover the 14 and a half because Michigan can't seem to move the ball or find a quarterback.
See, now I'm a little bit afraid to go with Indiana here after Ross, you just pointed out you might be the jinx. But I agree with you guys. This is a huge number. The books are finally getting smart by making these spreads a lot bigger. That wasn't the case for most of these weeks. Why would I pick Michigan when we've pointed out this multiple times? Their quarterback problems are continuous on a week-to-week basis. A guy freaking retired from the quarterback competition. They can't figure that spot out so poorly. So I'm going with Indiana as well. It's not a pick that I would willingly take or give out, but if I have to go with a selection here, I'm taking Indiana.
I've been riding Indiana the whole season. We're picking Hoosiers. 14 and a half is nothing for them. They'll take that. Georgia giving 2.5 at Ole Miss, 3:30 p.m. on ABC. Ross?
This is a tough one, Dan. You know, it's hard to pick against. I was hoping the spread was a little more, like 4 or 5, because then I think I would have picked Ole Miss to cover. But at just 2.5, I think Georgia can cover that and will. And we'll win on the road and cover the 2.5. But this is tight, and I think it is going to be a tight game and come down to the last possession. But I think Georgia does just enough defensively, you know, to maybe erase some mistakes from its offense, which we've seen plenty from Carson Beck, 11 interceptions this year. I think they do just enough to win this game in a nail-bite night or low-scoring, like, you know, 23-17 thing.
Yeah, I'm going Georgia as well. As long as Kirby Smart is not staring at an elephant or the color crimson on the other sideline, he takes care of business. So I'm expecting that here, especially with that smallest number. I'm not going against him. Carson Beck has made a lot of mistakes. He's thrown a lot of interceptions. That's partly because they've asked him to throw so much. They really haven't run it very well, but they did run a bit against Florida. I'm going to say they can do enough offensively, and the defense is good enough that they're going to be able to at least make things a little more difficult for Jackson Dart. So I'm rolling with the dogs.
I made the mistake last week of putting faith in James Franklin at home when he can't win these big games. And Lane Kiffin, the SEC version of James Franklin, lots of failures to step up to the plate. We always think it. We always wonder, like, maybe this is the game that Lane can do it. And they always don't show up. They play very poor performances last year, multiple times against Georgia, Alabama. I don't have faith in Kiffin to get it done here. These teams are pretty evenly matched with a couple of differences where each team might have a strength over the other. I got to go with the better coaching staff. And last piece, you brought up Carson Beck, Pat. I think that Beck has been playing poorly, but Ole Miss's secondary is weak enough for him to play a better game, assuming he doesn't have the same poor decisions that he had against Florida.
2.5 isn't enough. I'll take in Georgia. I could see Ole Miss keeping it close and trying to have the ball with a chance to take the lead in the final possession, but get stopped or something like that. But 2.5, I would need at least 3.5, and I'm not getting it. So Georgia Bulldogs, Colorado given 3.5 at Texas Tech. I believe that's the mandated 3.5 is the mandated Big 12 spread in all games. 4 o'clock. We talked earlier about it. Could Coach Prime dodge the tortillas, Pat?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Tough number. I'm going to roll with the Buffs and Coach Prime here. They've won 3 straight road games pretty impressively. Dominated Colorado State team that's now second in the Mountain West. Dominated Central Florida. Dominated Arizona. I think they can handle tortilla land. And I'm going with the team that has the most talent at the skill positions. Give me the Buffs.
Same. Yeah, give me Shadur. Give me Travis Hunter. And give me Prime to win and set up a big final few games in Boulder to get to that Big 12 title game. I think they have more on the line in this one, and I think they go in there and play well.
Got a lot of agreement on today's show. Colorado is stepping into a matchup against a team that statistically their defense is one of the worst in the country. They're giving up a ton of yards against the pass, against the run. Taj Brooks went off last week against Iowa State, but it feels like there's a little bit of recency bias here that we think maybe the market thinks that Iowa State can, or that Iowa State performance is indicative that Texas Tech is going to go on some sort of a run here to finish out the year. I don't think that's the case. Colorado's got too much firepower. If this turns into a fast break offense for Colorado like we've seen, Texas Tech is not going to be able to catch up.
Yeah, I agree. It took Tech a heroic last minute drive to win that game up in Ames, and they had lost 2 in a row. I like Colorado. 3.5 doesn't scare me. So Buffs, I think we're very unified here. South Carolina giving 3.5 at Vanderbilt. A game of interest that no one saw coming. That's why it's on 4:15 p.m. on the SEC network. Ross?
Yeah, I hate to pick against the boys from Vandy, the Vandy boys, as they call their baseball team. They've been playing really well, but South Carolina just had the huge upset of A&M, and Lenora Sellers and Rocket Sanders, they put on enough of a show in that game to make me think that they're going to take that on the road. And I think the Gamecocks are going to cover that 3.5 at Vandy. But I don't feel great about it, Dan, because picking against Diego isn't smart.
That's why I'm not going to do it. Ah. I'm not picking against the Albuquerque Tinkler. We finally have a difference of opinion here. This is a really interesting game, too. Both teams have had really good seasons with one bad game. South Carolina's was at home against Ole Miss. Vandy's was at Georgia State. Other than that, their losses have been close and competitive, and their wins have been impressive. But I am not picking against the Tinkler here. They've been really good in Nashville, and I think we have the Tinkler against the Cock Commanders. How about that?
There you go. Perfect.
Give me Vandy.
Oh, man, love the last quip you threw in there. I'm with you on this, Pat. I can't go against Vandy because of how chaotic they've been, and they don't do anything that's particularly exciting statistically, and it's not like they've got all this premier talent on their roster compared to a team like South Carolina. But the big factor here is that they're playing teams super close. More importantly, big, hyped-up, emotional, exciting win for them last week against Texas A&M. This quite literally just happened the previous week where South Carolina catches Texas A&M where they're all hyped up. Mm-hmm. I think that Vandy catches them. At the very least, they cover that 3.5 hook is very beneficial for Vandy to get that job done.
Yes, it's the hangover, like, baton has been handed over.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to take Vanderbilt on this home. Great. This is a big game. Like, the definition of a great season for one of these two teams or a good season is like this is a big one, you know.
So Ross is lone cock.
Lone cock. Congratulations. Mm.
I'd rather be lone cock.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, we've all just kind of gone with it to this point.
I won't expound on it.
That's okay. Let's move on.
My wife only hears me talk. She doesn't hear you guys. Somebody, she's probably wondering what is going on in that room.
Somebody on Twitter clipped a great clip of Ross from the last show saying, "Holy Jesus!" And now somebody's going to get lone cock.
All right, moving on.
Alabama, Crimson Tide. Heard of them? They're giving 3 at LSU. Again, we talked a lot Tuesday's show. 7:30 on ABC. Knockout game. Pat.
Yeah, tough one. I mean, fascinating game. Another small spread. I'm going to pick against Brian Kelly in Death Valley at night where he's undefeated. I'm going to do it. I'm taking Alabama in the three. Jalen Milroe has not been great, but there's been times he's been very good, and the LSU defense will give him some opportunities to get well and get right, and I think they will make enough plays against the Tigers and outscore them. The other thing, the Alabama defense has actually played better and better, really, as the season's gone along, so I'm going with the Tide and Kalen DeBoer.
You know, Alabama usually has a lot of success in Tiger Stadium, at least under Nick Saban and under Bear Bryant. They've had a lot of success in Tiger Stadium. I think Bear Bryant
went. Success everywhere with those two.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But I think they went 15 years under Bear Bryant without losing a game in Tiger Stadium, maybe even more, maybe more like 20. And Nick Saban went his entire career except 2022 and then his first couple years. So went like a 10-year span without losing in Baton Rouge. And I think they'll be obviously amped up down there. It's a night game. It sets up them to win this game. It really does. But I actually am going to go with Alabama here. And I think Alabama wins and covers the spread. They go in there. Jalen Milroe and them do enough to move the ball against that LSU defense. And Garrett Nussmeier, as good as he's been, right, he's made an awful lot of mistakes, and he throws some interceptions. And I think that's where the game turns. So give me the Tide to cover a close one down there in Baton Rouge.
I'm taking LSU. I'm not going to bet against LSU at home as an underdog at night against Alabama. And I get what you guys are saying. It makes a lot of sense. But the biggest part for me, first year for Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. This is a really difficult, rowdy environment for him to have to step into. And on top of this, they've had their own issues. Tons of penalties, tons of missed assignments, lots of inconsistency throughout games where they'll play a really good first half, a bad second half for the inverse. This is a setting where the penalties get ramped up, the mistakes get ramped up, so I'm taking LSU.
Yeah, that was kind of one of my points. They struggled with the crowd at Tennessee, and then they're going to struggle with this. Is going to be the same, if not louder. Neyland's pretty loud, so doesn't take a backseat to anyone. But if it did, it would be Tiger Stadium. Brian Kelly has a way of winning the game that he needs to win the most, and just when you think it's over, or it's spinning out of control, he pulls this thing out. And I think he's going to do it with his team. I think Nussmeier is going to play well. It is a scary game to pick. But if I'm going to get 3 points for LSU, I'm going to take it. So I will go with the Tigers. All right, lock of the week.
I got one, Dan. Cal plays at Wake Forest. Each 4-4. Big ACC showdown, you know, Cal and Wake Forest. And Cal is a 7-point. I got a 7-point favorite on here, Joe. I don't know what you got, but I think the Demon Deacons do enough to cover that. That spread surprised me a little bit. Give me Cal or give me Wake Forest to cover that by a touchdown.
I was thinking about going with Texas at home against Florida, but the Napier news has just got me a little bit. It throws a little bit of an unsure dynamic into it. So I'm going with the other beaten down Sunshine State team on the road against a ranked opponent, Florida State against Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame's going to destroy them. Big number, 26. I don't care. Florida State has showed every sign that they've quit. Notre Dame has everything to play for. Notre Dame's had an off week, so the healthy guys, if there were questionable guys, they should be healthy. Unfortunately, the last piece of the puzzle would be if it's like 40 degrees and sleeting, but it's not going to be, it looks like. So 50s and cloudy in South Bend, but I think Notre Dame rolls Florida State in what we thought would be a big game and is nothing resembling one.
My lock of the week, I'm going to take Iowa State minus -3 versus Kansas. Kansas has lost a lot of close games this year, but this Iowa State team coming off of a loss, needing to recalibrate and regain some momentum, they are equipped defensively to, I think, slow down that rushing attack for Kansas. And I think that they need to win defiantly here by 3 or more in order to rebuild again, to get that momentum back.
This is scary because Cam Scatboo, I think, is now, he's been moved up to questionable. I think he's going to play in this game, is my guess. And it is Arizona State giving 3 against by hosting UCF. If he plays, I'm going to feel really good about it. I think he's going to play. He also had lost his dog this week. This is why I think he's going to be in a good. We know this story. Cam Scatboo is an amazing player, obviously.
Yeah, just a battering ram.
Yeah,
it's like unbelievable. A Mike Alstott, except not quite as heavy.
Questionable all the time, but anyway, yeah, he had a puppy and it got out. He didn't know if it was stolen or missing. He put it on Instagram or Twitter, everywhere, that his puppy was lost and is gone, and he needed to find it. Someone suggested he join up to Nextdoor Tempe, you know, that Nextdoor app where like people complain about whoever's got their garbage cans out too long. And that thing is a cesspool, man. Neighborly arguments. He joined Nextdoor and put it out on that. And sure enough, 37 minutes later, the dog was back. They found the dog in the neighborhood. He promised a huge reward. We're not sure what the reward is. Maybe it's playing and beating UCF. I don't know. Do not underestimate the power of Cam Scatboo or Nextdoor Tempe. And do not underestimate the power of Arizona State. They're going to win this game, cover, and go get their amazing seventh win of the season. There you go. How's that? I really just picked them because I wanted to get the dog, lost dog. You know, I'm so far good. In first place. I can just pick locks of the week based on quality of content for our audience. That's who I care about.
Well, check back in on Sunday and see if you're still ahead.
Yeah, guy might not even play. Who knows? Oh, well, he's play with his, watch the game with his puppy. All right, that's our show. Appreciate everyone listening, sharing us on social media, telling your friends about us. We'll be back Sunday to overreact with it all. Talk to you later.